Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello, Matthew.
Are you looking forward to this one, Richard?
Is the Pope Catholic?
Well, I tell you what, mate, it's funny you should say that because no, the Pope is a goalkeeper, my friend.
He is indeed. What an exciting show we have for you now.
Absolutely, because this week's guest is a man who restarted from the bottom and is now very much here. At one stage, as far down as the sixth tier of non-league football, a stratospheric rise to Charlton, and then Burnley has propelled him into the Premier League, where he currently resides as one of the division's top goalkeepers. Chuck an England call-up, a first England cap, and a trip to the 2018 World Cup in the mix, and you have a goalkeeper very much on the up. Nick Pope, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hiya, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Now, Nick, I just want to start by saying I've got a bit of bad news for you, mate. I'm really sorry. Now, yeah, mate, it's tough because you know how in life the old adage goes that there's always someone better around the corner. In this case, you have met your match, my friend, when it comes to Connect Four. I'm an absolute demon.
I've got a match. I've not seen him yet, so I'd be interested in that.
Talk to me about this. I don't know what this is.
It's just like, it's kind of just a game we used to play on holiday growing up, and I'm like the youngest sibling, like, so I've just one brother who's 3-4 years older than me, and then my mum and dad, and like got to like when I was 10, 11, like obviously through years playing it every year, and like I was just better than everyone. Don't know like where it came from or whatever, and then just played a few other people like over years and never seemed to get beat really.
So, do you know what I think? Then we need to have a little three-way tournament because I fancy myself at Connect Four as well.
You do know what Connect Four is, right?
I mean, I didn't know what the story was. Right. Is this right? Okay. So is Nick Pope known for his Connect Four prowess?
Apparently so.
Is that right?
Mm. Yeah.
And get bonus points for Connect Four.
Do you ever play those sort of games with teammates, by the way? I know there's stories of players playing table tennis. Rio Ferdinand was always a massive one at Man United. Do you play that type of competitive game aside from football in training?
No, the lads have... like a two-touch before training, and then the loser gets like an ear flick, a couple of ear flicks by everyone. So if there's like 10 in the group, you're getting 9 ear flicks, like, which on a cold day in Burnley is a pretty harsh punishment.
How do you, out of interest, I think this is like a general goalkeeping thing in that you start the day with a little bit of two-touch. How do you fare in two-touch? Have you got a little bit?
No, I think the lads try and stick it on me, to be honest. So I've probably got not as much as the others, to be fair. But I think they're trying to stitch me up as well. I'm sure they're having me off between themselves. I'm getting all sorts chucked at me, like left hip and just below my knee, and all sorts coming at me. So
that was one that would wind me up when they aim for the hip and there's literally nothing you can do. It's
Well, if you've got the ability, Rich, you're able to,
No, look, by the way, have you ever played two-touch?
Of course I've played two-touch. I know what two-touch is.
Okay, you're really good at two-touch.
I'm okay.
Yeah? All right, we'll have a game of two-touch. I'll tell you what, let's have a competition. Connect Four and two-touch. I'm in.
What a day. How exciting that day will be. To be fair, Nick, as well, the teammate stuff is quite interesting because I know that, and this might be a Sean Dyche connection, but don't you have some sort of court system at Burnley, like with a trial and a jury, a bit like Rich?
Yeah,
I know you had that at Watford.
We've got a jury in that, yeah. We have like a spin wheel. So if anything's deemed not acceptable around the training ground or whatever from our lab, so it's normally a picture gets taken or it gets said at the Friday for a game in the meeting. We have like a meeting and then it goes to the jury if it's a contentious one, and you have to spin the wheel for your fine, basically. So the wheel's like 30 numbers or something, so it depends.
Do you know, I'm always fascinated by that. Like, everyone has their own fines list, and I remember some of the ones we had at Brentford. They got a little bit scandalous at the end. But in terms of the fine list, do you have any fines in particular that are a little bit out there?
There's actually a general kind of code of conduct, but then how far else it kind of goes, really. So there's not really like a set limit for certain things. It's just kind of people put it in, and then see, it goes to the jury, and often it rules against the person who it's against.
this is the thing it always rules against. I've never known anyone to go to a court case and actually, and I don't know, like you said, if it doubles the fine or what have you, I have no idea why anyone would ever take it to court. In fact, one of the stories, I might have told this before on the podcast, but the only reason I'll mention it is that it does involve Mr. Sean Dyche. We had a jury. In fact, you might want to ask him about this, but it's still something that haunts me to this very day, in that he was the defendant, I was part of the prosecution, and it was, I can't remember what the fine was even for, but I produced a load of evidence. Me being me, I went away, I was a little bit of a geek, I produced a lot of evidence. The jury then voted in my favour, so he then owed, I think it was £50, I think it might have been, and let's just say that he had the £50 on him the entire time. In terms of where he kept that £50, it wasn't a particularly nice place. So he handed me, yeah, you know exactly where I'm going with this. So it's something that haunts me to this day, with me having to take that £50 from Sean. Yeah, that wasn't particularly pleasant.
Yeah, you spent that quick, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I burnt it quick, yeah.
Nick, look, as with every goalkeeper, there's quite a journey to dissect here. You had the ascent, quite an ascent, I suppose you could say, to the very top of the English game. We're going to come to all of that. But first, whenever I've listened to you talking in interviews, both about life and goalkeeping, I have to say there is an eerie similarity to a certain man sitting opposite me right now. I've got one such quote that I'm going to read out to you. As a goalkeeper, you look at different things to most outfield players in the game, and you can almost make goalkeeping a kind of individual sport within a team sport. That is straight out of the mouth of Richard Lee, I can tell you.
Straight off the book.
There is a lot of truth, though, right? I preach a lot. What we do is completely different. I want to get into that a bit, obviously, your training methods and the way in which you work. But it is, look, I will always preach this. We are playing a sport within a sport and having to learn completely different skill set in order to get to the top of that sport. And I mean, look, we're going to touch on this now, your rise from where you were to where you are now. Am I right in thinking that one of the constants you've had throughout the entire journey is quality coaching?
Yeah, and also just, I'd say that, and just the variety you get, I suppose, from changing clubs and going on different loans as well. You get to just go through different coaches, and obviously, like we were saying, learning from each one. And obviously, all coaches are slightly different, and it's kind of selecting what works best for you out of their thoughts, really, and kind of adjusting your game and putting them into your game. In that way, that was a massive help for me. But yeah, like you say, I was really lucky to have, wherever I went, a great goalie coach. I think that's a massive thing for a goalkeeper, especially a young lad going on loan as well, like in your first ones in the league and the conference as well. I think to have someone who you can talk to separately to the manager, as you like, it's a massive help.
We also have a man here, Nick, who achieved various levels of education post-career. Is that right, Rich? You got qualifications?
I did a degree, yes, this is true.
In?
Media and journalism.
Is that, you have a bit more, right? Don't do yourself down, mate.
Neuro-linguistic programming, I'm a master practitioner of that, and a couple of other smaller bits.
Okay, well, the reason I mention this, I'm not just trying to force stuff out of you right now.
Go on.
The reason I mention it is because this is where we can kind of get into the start of things for you, Nick, because I know that your journey's obviously been different. We'll get into that. But in terms of your educational background, if I'm right, you were privately educated. You decided to leave that to focus on a college that was geared towards football. Can you just run us through your education and how you progressed through that and the degree? I think you took a degree while you were still playing football.
Yeah, so that was kind of at 16. So once you finished GCSEs, I kind of selected to go to this college. It was fairly local to me and just not a very popular route. I was the only one to go there from the school that I left for years and years. I'm not sure how many have been since either. It's quite a rare route. Just something I felt I needed at the time to change. So I went to the college to do a business marketing degree. So that took 2 years. And obviously the football was alongside that. And then in my third year, I'd done a sports science diploma. So there are two diplomas over the 3 years. And that took me to 19. That's when Charlton offered me the opportunity to obviously be a professional and also through the PFA do a university course, a university degree. That's how it all kind of came together. Although the university degree didn't last too long once I realised it was taking a lot of time and effort out of me. And when you get a second chance in football, as I felt like it was myself, it's something that I just thought best to just park this for a minute and kind of, you know, give football a real go and give it a chance, and it's something I could always go back to.
Do you know what? It's interesting you say that. So I'm asked this question a lot, where I was someone that I delved into the business world when I was quite young, really, in my football career. I look back and I do regret it, genuinely regret it, because I think when you're in football, you give football absolutely everything, with the thought that, look, there's obviously a risk attached to it, that if you end up leaving the game young, then of course you might not necessarily have the funds, the finances to then go and do something else and give everything to something else in terms of learning something different. The bit to make a note of as well is, certainly when it comes to the PFA, and I think a lot of people don't necessarily know this, but they do help out quite a lot, don't they, in terms of funding. You know, I certainly know my media degree, I was very fortunate, they funded the majority of it. And from my point of view, I thought, well, why not? Why not try and get that? Certainly towards the back end of my career, it was a really nice thing to go into. Out of interest, what was the degree that you started, and is it something you might go back to?
I think it was a sports marketing degree it was, but honestly, it lasted about 6 weeks, 2 months. Like, I was having to go from Charlton Streatham training across London on the South Circular to Roehampton. It was like 18 miles, but it was taking like 2 hours, like, and then 2 hours on the way home. It just really, like, made it tough for me. And I was going to training and felt I was missing certain things in the gym, and it just built on top of me, where I just thought, like, it's not the right time for me to be doing this, you know, like, it's something that didn't go down too well in my family, like, with my mum and dad. But they turned their heads in the end. They got round there in the end, so that was all right. But it was just something I was interested in. I'm not sure about going back to it now. It's something I've not thought about too much, to be honest, since I've kind of left it. Kind of, I was lucky enough to sign another contract kind of 6 months after leaving at Charlton, and then so I've kind of managed to keep rolling since then. So I've not managed to kind of look into it yet, to be honest.
Well, that is obviously where it all started for you. You dropped out of Ipswich and went down to Bury Town. We've actually discussed your meteoric rise on the podcast a fair few times, but you were at Bury Town. But even when you were at Bury Town, you played for Team Bury. Is that right? Now, I said the sixth tier of non-league football at the top. I'm not even sure if that's right. It might have even been lower than that at the time.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you what that was. It was the Essex and Suffolk Border League, that one. yeah, it's a really low level, but it was great for me because it was just men's football, and Team Bury's kind of like the Bury Town kind of reserves, and it's full of kind of 16 to 19, 20-year-olds kind of thing. Maybe, you know, we might have had one or two 35-year-olds as well chucked in there to kind of give us a bit of strength, if you like. So it was great for me, though, to go out of academy football into that for a goalkeeper. I think it was great for me, you know, getting high balls chucked under, you know, playing men's football, like the physicality that comes with that. It was perfect for me at that time, even though it was, like I say, a really low level, but I was getting loads of touches, I was playing loads of games, and, you know, having lots of, you know, new things to do that I didn't get in academy football.
Do you know, I want to, you'll be a perfect person to answer this, because I've touched on this point a couple of times before, where I played a little bit, a tiny bit in the Premier League, obviously not to your level, but a little bit in the Premier League, and then as low as League One. And I noticed that going down, it actually became tougher to some extent, because you are dealing with different things. Now, you've really had the full spectrum, playing at the level that you did, and now playing at the level you are. One of the arguments I've always made, that for a goalkeeper, if anything, it's not that it becomes easier the lower you get. Maybe the quality of the shots aren't quite the same and what have you. But if anything, you're arguably busier the lower you are because of the amount of aerial challenges, the amount that you have to deal with. Was that, and also the fact that the conditions, you know, you're not necessarily playing on a carpet week in, week out. You're maybe having to deal with the wind and rain that little bit more. How have you found the two? If you were to compare playing in the Premier League and playing in the lower tiers like you have, as a goalkeeper, what kind of difference did you feel?
I kind of agree with you. To be honest, like less touches in the higher up you go, really, and probably obviously the higher up you go, like say, higher quality of shots, and probably the decisions become more difficult, obviously, because I think because you get less touches, that's part of that as well, because you're in the game less, so to make a good decision is probably harder. So those sort of things that are kind of different as you kind of go to level. I remember when I made my Charlton debut and I spoke to my York goalie coach like the week after, and he said, oh, kind of, what's the difference, what do you think of it? I just said, like, I felt hardly had a touch, like, compared to being in League Two, you know, every corner's coming in the box, there's no short corners, every free kick within your half is coming in the box as well, every throw in, you're getting loads of decisions to make at a regular occurrence, you've got a lot more touches and involvement in the game. I felt like then when I was at York and Bury in League Two compared to Charlton in the Championship, and now yeah, again, the Premier League, it's definitely something where I feel that the touches I have is less in quantity, but just, yeah, more the quality side.
Speaking of touches as well, Nick, I know that Richard Wilkins, who was one of your first managers, I believe, when you were at Bury Town, has spoken a lot about you in the past few years. He's been interviewed a lot. And one of the quotes that struck me was when he talked about your kicking. And he said he had a long run up and then he sort of collapsed his body over the ball as he was kicking it. It only went about 25 yards.
Yeah. Proper Bambi on ice, but yeah. Kind of my mechanics, I think, kind of when I was 16, like, I was tall, skinny, kind of gangly person and goalkeeper. So it made kicking quite difficult for me. And I think that's probably how I did look. And it's kind of something, like Richard said, we looked at something to definitely work on. So we've kind of been working. I'm still working on it to this day. It's something that I enjoy trying to improve as well. And obviously footwork's become a bigger part of the game now than it ever has done. Something as well that's probably different to League Two as well. And, you know, lower down the league, you know, I think your feet, it becomes more important as you go upwards, and something that's, you know, Richard is a massive help with, to be honest, because like I said, coming out of academy football where you found a lot of goal kicks and whatever, and then you go into men's football where you've got a big centre half, so like showing you the numbers on the back of the shirt near the halfway line, like asking you kick it every time. So it was a big learning curve, and yeah, something he definitely started helping me with.
This is going to be, I mean, this sounds like an obvious question, but when you were at that stage, I mean, you mentioned, you know, you called yourself Bambi on ice when you were 16, you obviously were playing for Ipswich in the academy. That didn't work out. You had to drop down. I know that everyone will say, you know, I really believed I was going to get to the top, but when you were playing for Team Bury and Bury Town in non-league, you were still a teenager, so I suppose you had time on your side, but did you always believe that you were going to make it to the top, or was any part of you thinking, do you know what, this might be it for me?
Yeah, I didn't believe at all, to be honest. I didn't see it like that. I kind of felt like, you know, you get dropped out of the academy football, and I kind of thought, you know, that's probably it. I know I was 16, so not many people come from non-league to go into League Two even, or, you know, something that kind of went out of my mind, and I just started to enjoy football again. I found academy football like a really kind of high-pressured, like, structured environment, and something that wasn't ideal for myself, and something that I didn't enjoy a great deal towards the end. To be able to kind of come out of that and to play with, you know, more like your friends that you're seeing every day at college, and you're playing midweek and you're playing your weekends and seeing them around college and spending your free time with them, it became more of a enjoyable thing for me. So that was a massive part, because I was in the academy system 5-6 years. You get so used to that, and I got to enjoy all the things I missed out on for them 5-6 years from playing with my friends that I had at school, or, you know, away from near home or whatever. So it was just something that I needed. But the professional football was just something that, you know, kind of went out of my mind then, you know. I chose that setup and that system to enjoy my football again, and, you know, and see how far I could take it. And you know, obviously, non-league football is still high quality players, and then I still wanted to take my football as far as I thought I could go. I just didn't kind of know how far that would be at that time, really.
I mean, it's fascinating that you got, obviously didn't work out in the academy. I mean, to think of where you are now, and this is where, I suppose, you look at academies up and down the country, and of course they're always judging players based on where they are at that moment in time, but also with the potential. I mean, it's crazy to think now, and who knows what your valuation is, given that you are a young English goalkeeper. Who knows what your valuation is. But the fact that you were released, I mean, have you heard from anybody from Ipswich since? Have you ever spoke to anybody who's explained the decision to you? Do you think at the time it was the right decision?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, that's kind of what the funny thing is. Obviously, in hindsight now, it's obviously easy to say. But as I was saying before, it's something I wasn't really enjoying the football too much. I didn't feel like I was playing well, and the environment I was in, it wasn't really suited to me, I don't think. So I just think the route, I wouldn't have been released at that time, and Ipswich would have hung on to me for a year or two more years. I can't see how it would have worked out this way, you know. I think it obviously, don't know how it would have worked out, but I just don't think it would have enabled me to develop at the rate that I did. Going to college, I managed to play 150 games in 3 years, and met new coaches and new, you know, people, and it was just new experiences and playing men's football, and all them things kind of came together and helped build me as a goalkeeper and a person, and just things that wouldn't have happened if I'd have stayed in the academy system. So I just think it was the right decision at the time. Like, I wasn't playing great and I wasn't enjoying it. Like, I don't see how they could have made another decision, really. But unless they would have done, I don't think that would have been the right decision for myself or the club. I think academy players do get released. It's a horrible part of the job for the staff. But I think you, from a staff member point of view, it's generally best for the person as it is for the club, you know, rather than keeping you there where they don't think you're good enough or and hang you in there. It's just another year. You'd be wasted, really. You're best off if they don't think you're good enough and you've got a chance to then, you know, rebuild yourself and do other things or and learn other things and go into different environments. So I generally think when, you know, players are released, you've got to try to turn it into a positive, really, and kind of make the most of it and not be down in the doldrums and think that it's kind of the end of the world, which very much I did think that was the case at the time. It's just about, you know, trying to, you know, gather your thoughts and rebuilding yourself after that and realising it's not the be-all and end-all.
It's a really good ball to find Palmer. A great chance for the opener. Is it going to go in? Nick Pope continues to be nigh on unbeatable.
Speaking of sliding doors moments, because that's another thing that we often talk about on the podcast, and I don't know how much I buy into the sliding doors theory, because it's pretty much every decision that you make in life. You know, I could have walked into this office via a different route today, for example, and that would have created something completely different in terms of a chain reaction of events. Let's not get too deep. Sorry. What I would say is that your switch to Charlton was kind of a sliding doors moment, and I think the mindset that you had, that you already said on this podcast, and that you weren't that focused on making it into the big time, you didn't think you were going to make it, perhaps you were more relaxed at the time, but they came to see you in a one-off game against Billericay. You had a good game on that day and then you got the move.
Yeah, so right place, right time, and it was a massive game at the time. Actually, I think we were third and they were top, or the other way around, or we were second and third, so it was a big game. It was like the March or April in the season as well, and we were playing at their place. So it was Richard Wilkins who kind of pulled me in the week and said, you know, you're gonna play at the weekend. So it was a massive, you know, thing for me. And part of why I went to college, and like I was saying before, wanted to, you know, see how far from my football went. And when you're in college and Bury Town, the club connected, you know, to play in that first team is, you know, is a massive thing, and not something that, you know, many people get to do. So it was a massive moment to be trusted into and thrown into such a big game. So obviously, like you say, just one of the moments where, like, they were watching at the right time and I managed to play well, which was, you know, obviously a massive thing. And, yeah, it all worked out. And then after the game, I think we were on the bus and I think someone mentioned, like, Charlton were watching the game and they were watching me and stuff. And I thought, yeah, at first I thought of it and I just tried not to get ahead of myself and kind of, you know, try to forget about it. And then obviously, within a few weeks, I had a trial, and then a few weeks after that, I was signing my first contract.
Now, this is where it gets really interesting for me, I think, because this whole Charlton thing is quite thought-provoking, you could say. You know, you were rated, you were recognised as part of the squad. You know, Ben Roberts was the goalkeeper coach. He said that there was a long-term plan for you. You were continually given new deals, yet you weren't properly given a decent run in the team until, I think it was your fifth season, after which you left for Burnley. But it's the contracts, and I was saying this to Rich before we came on air today, you know, you signed in 2011 for 2 years.
Yeah.
Halfway through that, in 2012, you signed for another 2 years. Halfway through that, in 2013, you signed for 3 years. And then one third of the way through that, in 2014, you signed for 4 years. So you'd signed four separate contracts at the club. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, by the way, but at which point, I think you'd played just one game.
That's a great start. I didn't know that. But I remember the lads having me off after, I think, I signed the third one, so I was going with my agent was and stuff. I've been to find more deals than anyone. It's, yeah, kind of a little bit of a mixture of things, really. One of them's like a reward for going on loan and obviously proving myself at different levels. And the loan club can cover your wages, say, when you go on loan. So if you prove yourself at a certain level and a club from a higher level wants you, and they can cover more wages, and Charlton can put me on more money, if you know what I mean, without costing them, because they go loan me out to a club that can afford them wages, if that kind of makes sense. So I think that was probably a bit of it. And the first contract I actually signed was, I think it was kind of Charlton were just trying to kind of seeing how it would go, really. So because, like I said, the university was built in, because I was already going to Nottingham anyway before that. So they kind of thought, like, rather than do that, come to train with us 5 days a week and go to university. And if it works out, it works out. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. So it's kind of well them. And then after, like you say, 6 months in, I think that I signed another contract. That's kind of them saying to me, we do rate you and, you know, want you to, you know, give it a real go. And also I'd notified them that, you know, I wasn't doing university anymore and I was putting it all into Charlton, and that was them kind of repaying me, I suppose. Every time you sign a contract, it's kind of a, you know, a showing of faith more than words, you know, to that they trust your ability and they think you can go somewhere. So it was a nice confidence boost to have them contracts, have security as well, to have that off your mind. That's a massive thing for footballers when you're first starting out, is to, you know, to have the security to how many years you're going to be playing, or you will be playing at least. So
yeah, well, it was certainly a wise choice, as it's turned out to be now. Someone I want to ask about, and someone obviously you had to work with during that time, is Ben Roberts, someone else who we've talked about quite a bit on this podcast. And one of the reasons being, it amazes me how many goalkeepers, top goalkeepers, have worked with him or have been produced by him at some point. Because, you know, I can think of half a dozen names off the top of my head who speak really highly about the work that he does. Now, of course, you worked with him for a period of time. What sort of impact did he have on your game?
Yeah, massive. He was the one that kind of, you know, brought me into Charlton and had me day in, day out from the start when I was raw as a goalkeeper, if you like. You know, I had a few tools, but I was quite, you know, still quite gangly then, like I was saying earlier. So it was about, you know, tidying myself up, really, and being like a rough diamond and trying to, you know, to iron out a lot of things. So it was a massive part of, you know, working through the kinks that I had, kind of thing, to make me into conference, a goalie good enough, you know, Le Ryman, the Conference South and the Conference, and kind of going through all them spells, you know, and speaking to him after the games at them levels. So obviously he's gone to the first team to watch them. So to kind of speak to him about, you know, different things and going through the clips and stuff. So he's, he's massive for my game and someone, you know, you could talk to about all sorts of things, goalkeeping, whether it be on the telly or in my game or in the Charlton first team game. So it's, he was someone that was massive for me and a massive help to, you know, helping me get on loan, you know, making phone calls to managers, seeing if they needed a goalkeeper, or in all them things are massive, really, for a goalkeeper trying to come through, is to get a loan club to have you, basically, and to trust a kid to go in their goal is a massive thing. You know, playing for 3 points and managers' jobs on the line, people and, you know, paychecks, and your goalie coach has got to, or hopefully he's one that, you know, ring up and you know, fight my corner to hopefully, you know, get moves to these clubs that would give me, you know, opportunities to play games and get experience. So, yeah, it was a massive part for me and my development at Charlton, definitely.
Another debut, by the way. This is just a side note. Another debut for Charlton off the bench. Maybe I'll get too involved in this, but it always happens. Final day of the 2012-13 season. This time for friend of the show, David Button, by the way, Rich. So there you go, a little stat. But you had those loans, Nick. I think it was 6 loans in total. Again, won't go into too much detail about each specific one, but just a few stats. York, 14 clean sheets from 20 league matches. At the time you joined them, they were 5 points outside the relegation zone. They finished the season comfortably inside the top 7, with Bury 13 clean sheets in 22 appearances, and they went up as well. So, like you said, you did well on loan. Of course, bad times falling upon Bury. Actually, interested to know what you think of that. I know that you went back to watch Harrow Borough a couple of times with the loan spell that you had with them. Did you go back to Bury at all?
Yeah, I did. I went to watch Charlton, actually, in the first game of the season when Charlton were in League One. I think I might have been my first year at Burnley or second year at Burnley. So I've been back there, but, you know, it's terribly sad kind of what's going on, and, you know, crazy to think something like that's been allowed to happen. I feel sorry for the fans more than anyone, you know, for them to lose their club, and obviously on Saturday afternoon now they're welcome to watch the rest of the 91 clubs and beyond obviously carry on with their football, and they're there without, you know, a team to watch. Is, you know, tremendously sad and really badly kind of managed situation, and that's the worst thing. You kind of don't can't see how it's kind of how it's come to this. Obviously, waiting for news like everyone else now to see, you know, where and when they can bounce back, and, you know, what level that could be.
Sasevic made room brilliantly. Oh, what a save! Wonderful fingertip save from Nick Pope. Outstanding goalkeeping. I just think he scored there. Top save. Crucial, big save at this moment in the game from Pope.
So when you were on loan with these particular clubs, it was quite interesting because Chris Powell brought you into Charlton. The managerial system at Charlton then changed. He left in 2014. So it was a bit of a weird period for the club. I think there were four or five changes during the rest of your time there. But at the time you were there, you were obviously on loan at all these different clubs. What's that like for yourself as a player, not just as a goalkeeper, but as a player, when you're on loan at a club and you don't quite know what's going to be happening with your future? I know that you signed the contracts, but the managerial post keeps changing. Do they keep in touch with you? Is it difficult to know where you stand?
Yeah, look, it's funny you say about Chris then, because he called me into his office before I went to York. He said, I put my reputation on the line there, because he had spoke to Nigel Worthington, the York manager, and like you said, you know, they're in a relegation battle at the time. And he said, yeah, I've stuck my neck out for you here, so you've got to go there and do well. So that's it's exactly what you need as a goalkeeper. And, you know, I walked out of that room buzzing to play league football. I think once I signed for Charlton, my biggest dream then was to play league football. I think that was a massive thing, you know, when you're growing up, like the League Two goals are always on the telly, and you know, there's more coverage around like league football than, you know, the conference and stuff. So that was the big kind of goal then. So to have him call me in the office and to hear that and hear I was going to York, and he spoke really highly of me to help me get the move, was massive confidence boost, and obviously massive for me that he would do that for me to help me get there and help me improve and get the experience. So it was funny you mentioned that. So I remember being in his office then thinking, Jesus, I've got to do well now. Yeah. Yeah, losing touch. Was it the question about losing touch, sorry, and the managers as a change when you're alone, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of, in a selfish way, and it is to the club's benefit as well, you've got to concentrate on your loan and doing well and proving yourself at that level. I think you can't get too caught up and worried about, you know, your parent club when it's something that you can't affect at the time. You've got to, you know, put the performances in for your, the club you're playing for and hope that gets recognised. Obviously, I was kind of on loan mainly for January to the end of the season, so I was hoping to put performances in then to kind of help me for the next season with Charlton. So it's something that I'd have to kind of hope would get reported back to the manager and hope that they'd see my performances for them clubs to then, you know, hopefully allow me to have the chance at Charlton, you know, the following season.
Something I want to touch on just from this conversation, and it interests me, where I tend to bring a lot of stuff back to mindset. In fact, we had your ex-teammate Tom Heaton on recently, and of course, he's quite it's quite an interesting one from a mindset perspective, and he was talking quite a lot about
the cycle. Yeah, he's an interesting guy.
I tell you what, Nick, if you listen to that podcast, that certainly got deep.
It got quite deep. But do you know what I've noticed? Just this conversation so far is, you've got, it appears to be quite a different outlook. Like a few times, maybe this is just you being modest, but you said there when you're at Charlton, your goal was to play league football. When you dropped out of the game, you didn't even think about becoming a pro. It seems like the impression I get is you're more so just in the moment. Like you're just allowing it to unfold as it unfolds, rather than necessarily saying, I want to be this, I want to go and play 100 games for England, I want to do. It almost feels, is that fair that you just seem to allow it just to come and just take it as it comes?
I think so. I think you kind of try and set kind of realistic goals, it almost, you know. So if you managed to play league football, like my first game, York, my first one, yeah, I kind of said to myself, look, I want to stay in the team to the end of the season. That was a big thing. And you know, make the loan a success. So, you know, I was on loan with and Michael Ingham was a goalkeeper at York, who'd been there years and, you know, was a great goalkeeper and someone that I looked up to and was a massive help for my career as well. I must say, you know, going to all these new grounds and playing these teams that I've not played before, and he's always helped me, you know, giving me advice about different things. You know, I was going on loan thinking I'm not given to play, you know, I've got to earn the right and prove myself here. It's a bit about staying in the moment, yeah, and, you know, not looking too far ahead of yourself, definitely, and a little bit about just like setting goals. So after York, I wanted to play either for Charlton or in League One was kind of my next kind of a goal from there. And then when you go from there, you know, it's just about, you know, setting yourself mini targets, really, and working towards them.
Well, you got your move to Burnley, Nick, and that's where, you know, your career has really taken off. Again, made your Premier League debut coming off the bench to replace Tom Heaton, who got injured in that game against Crystal Palace. That was in 2017. Quite an incredible start to life in the Premier League. 6 clean sheets in your opening 10 Premier League games. You lost just 2 in that run against City and Arsenal, Manchester City and Arsenal. Great performance at Anfield against Liverpool in your first full season. I mean, this was effectively your first full season as a professional goalkeeper. You got a Player of the Year award, voted by the players and the fans. But it was quite the extraordinary situation. And again, it's something we've discussed many times on this podcast. Of course, you were there. Tom Heaton was the number one prior to you coming in. Joe Hart had also come into the club as well after you got injured. And we always say that Billy Mercer arguably had one of the toughest jobs in football, or perhaps it was one of the most envious jobs in football, because he had three number one goalkeepers and he had to juggle that. What was that whole situation like for you guys?
The easiest and best thing about it was, you know, they're both like top guys, really. You know, Joe and Tom are two people I get on really well with. Obviously, Tom, I've been lucky enough to see England now. We stayed in touch after he moved. So, you know, I'm someone that I consider a friend and someone that helped me out whilst I was in the team. You know, he's a great, you know, club captain, and I was, you know, new to the Premier League, and he was always helping me. You know, he was going through such a tough time with his injury. For him to kind of put that to the side to kind of help me for the benefit of the team and myself was, you know, was a massive thing. So, something I'll always be in debt to him for. And Joe, same, you know, even now I'm always speaking to him. We're friends off the pitch as well, and he's someone that, you know, I can take different situations to and ask his opinion on, and he's great with that. It's obviously someone with, you know, massive experience, you know, over 7 England caps and, you know, Premier League winners medal. So he's someone that I look up to massively and who I watched as a younger goalie. So, and someone who still now is, you know, as a top goalkeeper. So at the time, having obviously all three of us together was good in some ways and obviously difficult in others, because obviously only one can play, which is something, you know, every goalkeeper does know. Part and parcel of football. It's kind of funny because, you know, I was out for the first 6 months. I didn't kind of log it too much. It didn't kind of come to a fore until kind of the, you know, the second half of the season, when the strength and depth of the goalie department kind of got massive.
Well, I want to ask a bit about how it is now, because of course you brought in Bailey Peacock Farrell, Joe Hart, who we had on the podcast as well previously, is brilliant on the podcast and was very open and honest. And has it settled down now in that it is almost a set 1, 2, 3? And I say that with the greatest respect to Joe Hart, of course, in that I'm sure he would love to be number one and I'm sure he'll be pushing you as best he can. But is it a case of, you know, your roles and you know what the future? Because even Bailey Peacock Farrell, of course, he's gone from playing regularly at Leeds, playing regularly for his country, to now having played that number three role. But my guess would be that he's got an idea as to what his pathway could be, providing he develops. Have you all got a bit of an idea as to how the land lies?
I think obviously for Bailey, yeah, he's kind of a similar situation to when I first signed. Obviously, signing from Charlton, he signed from Leeds in the Championship as well. And, you know, there'll be a pathway to him like there was for me, you know, and an idea of how it's going to work out. He's someone, like I say, for someone his age to play as many champ games as he has for a massive club like Leeds, you know, he's someone who's well on the way to having a great career. Not sure about the 1, 2, 3 thing. We can't, it's not really set like that, I don't think, especially when you've got goalkeepers like Joe's, high class as he is, you know, is someone that is always going to push me in and obviously makes me not be able to, you know, take my foot off the gas and, you know, and look too far ahead of myself and get caught up in other things. I've got to concentrate, you know, on myself week in, week out, because although at any given moment, you know, Joe's there waiting and obviously itching to play.
We are now in a situation after you had a whirlwind year, I should say. Obviously, you got that England call-up. We'll get onto that and the World Cup in particular. But then you got injured. You dislocated your shoulder at the start of last season. That was in the Europa League qualifiers against Aberdeen. And I think it's really interesting to focus on this, because I read somewhere that you reflected, basically, in that time. You watched all the games back and thought about how you could then improve. Because in a sense, I suppose, with the way the land lied, and I know that Tom Heaton came back in for the second half of last season, it was quite an extraordinary situation. Joe played 19, Tom played 19, and then you came back in this season. But it was almost a case of you kind of having to prove yourself over again, I guess, in a sense. And this is part of it that I love, and I'd love to know if you do this to a bigger extent, in the sense that we had Keller Roos, the Derby goalkeeper, on the show. He really looks at stats, he analyses that massively. I know that Pat Mountain, the goalkeeper coach of Bristol City, watches hours and hours of footage. In fact, when he took the job at Hull City, he made a point of watching the goalkeepers there and all the games that they played the previous season. Do you do that yourself? So when you watched all those games back, were you watching yourself going, right, I haven't quite done that right, that's how I need to improve on certain aspects of my game?
Yeah, I don't think I looked at stats too much in depth, to be honest. It was more of kind of game by game and looking at certain things, you know, crosses into the box, can you affect through balls, you know, starting positions and, you know, positions when shots are taken from outside the box, inside the box, you know, positions on cutbacks or shots from different angles, and you just kind of look at everything, really. When you're injured as well, like obviously for myself, it's dislocated shoulder. You know, it's a long one. You've got a lot of time on your hands, so it's something I enjoyed to do. So I thought, what can I do to improve myself while I've got this time off? And it was just, there wasn't anything I could do physically. So it's just something that I thought, you know, kept me busy and was something that I like to do anyway and benefit from, you know, looking at clips every week after my games. But I just thought, you know, going through kind of in more depth over, like, I could have a big look at kind of an extended period of time. Like you say, it was a bit of a whirlwind year where I've gone from, you know, played all the games and got my first in court and then went to the World Cup and then came back from the World Cup, and then a week later I'm out for 6 months. It was all kind of not much time to stop and kind of reflect. So obviously that injury gave me, you know, a lot of time to do that.
Might still fall for Benteke in there. Through the middle, Benteke. Oh, what a save from Nick Cole to deny one of the best strikers in the Premier League. So Josselu with it. A save by Nick Cole to his left-hand side. He's making a real name for himself in the Premier League.
So we have to talk England. You made your debut ahead of the World Cup in 2018 prior to that call-up. I mean, I imagine the call-up is what it is. It was something that was incredible for you. But just in terms of your debut when you came on against Costa Rica, this is the slight geek inside of me, I suppose. You came on to replace Jack Butland. Now, when Jack Butland ran off the pitch and you came on, I know that he said something to you. Whether you want to reveal it or not, whether it was just simple game instruction or whether it was something else, did he give you any sort of motivational G-up before you came on?
Oh, that's a good question. That was a long time ago, that.
Well, it's only a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Long time in football, that.
Yeah.
I think it's just something along the lines of, you know, play your own game and, you know, do your own thing. I think when you make a debut, and it's an England debut, it's just a massive moment. Like, I found out the night before, you know, the goalie coach kind of said, you know, there's a good chance that you'll get some minutes tomorrow. So I think I like to go into like a World Cup with everyone with a cap. So as soon as I got called up the World Cup, I was kind of hopeful, you know, I'd get, you know, a couple of minutes to get a cap. When you get called up for your squad, that's all you want, you know. So I appreciate that now with the lads that are coming into the squad now, you know, like James Maddison and Tyrone Mings, who's obviously been the last couple of squads. And as soon as you're in the squad, you're itching to, you know, get on the pitch and just get that first cap. I think more than anything, it's something that no one can ever take away from you. So I was the same as that. And, you know, that was just the biggest thing for me, I think, to like I say, come on the pitch and obviously end the game 2-0 and we won. And, you know, and get to share that with your friends and family after the game is something, you know, you never forget.
Jordan Pickford was obviously the number one at the World Cup. And the Colombia penalty shootout was the main talking point in terms of a goalkeeper's perspective, I suppose. We spoke to Jack Butland about that penalty shootout because it was really interesting to watch. And I know that we dissected it in an article that you did, Rich, because just watching Jordan Pickford whilst that was all going on, there was a moment when he buried himself into Jack Butland. And I know that Jack had a word or two, but there was also a really good shot of you where you're giggling to an extent. You're laughing and joking. And I found that fascinating at the time, that we were on the cusp of England getting through to the quarterfinals of the World Cup for the first time in a while, a really good chance to get to the semi-finals and potentially the final. It's a penalty shootout, and you, Jack and Jordan are all sort of standing around having a bit of a giggle.
Yeah, penalties is a massive part of international tournaments and was something we'd spent as a group a lot of time on as goalkeepers and as, you know, as a 23 and as a staff as well. So there's a lot of thought that went into everything, and different players, how would you want to be in that situation? So for Jordan, that situation, he said, I want everything to be as it is, you know, normally, you know, relaxed, you know, not too serious. So I'm in the best position to think clearly to, you know, save the penalties though, and do the right thing. So that was kind of his thinking, and you know, me and Jack were just on board of that. So that laughing was just kind of, you know, part of that. You know, that's what he wanted, and we're happy with that. And obviously that was what was best for the team. So we just, you know, try to keep Jordan relaxed really in that time to, you know, help him.
Yeah, great stuff. Like I say, before we round up, I just want to touch on the way in which you play, you know, actually go into a bit of detail in terms of your game. You know, we talk a lot on here about the modern goalkeeper and how goalkeepers changed, certainly even since I played, and that wasn't that long ago, but it does feel like it's changing at such a quick rate. However, you would very much fit into the category of the modern goalkeeper. Now, is that something that's happened not by luck again, greatest respect, not by luck, but is that something that's just happened due to the great coaching you've had, or do you put a lot of thought into your game?
Yeah, I like to think I've put a lot of thought in, and like I was saying earlier about, you know, you take bits from wherever, if it's a goalkeeper on the telly or goalie coach that you have or another goalkeeper at your club, you try and almost steal bits from different people's games to make your game better that you think they've got that you could improve on, and, you know, you kind of try create the best goalkeeper you can out of all these tools and all these things. So that's what's great about watching goalkeepers, and like we said at the start about almost being an individual sport within a team sport, is, you know, watching games on the telly or watching them live and literally just watching the goalkeeper and all the things that he can do, whether it's, you know, positioning or distribution, you know, there's so many different aspects that you can do. So I think that's kind of what built me into the goalkeeper I am now, is building myself and just taking bits from, you know, other goalkeepers, whether ones I've played against or, you know, played with or I've just seen, basically.
Okay, Nick, well, I know Rich is chomping at the bit to ask his final question. Before we do that, I've got just a couple of quick fire questions for you that I'm interested to know the answers on. Firstly, cheese and ham omelette, baked beans and brown toast, is that still your pre-match meal?
That sounds like quite a lot. I've kind of cut it down, actually. I've started to Saturday is the last one, so it's quite recent. So I just had just a yogurt and some cereal, like a yogurt with granola.
That's all you had before a game?
Yeah, like the pre-match. So I kind of have like a bigger breakfast, if you know what I mean, and then have a lighter meal going into the game, yeah.
Do you know what? When I saw that you had a cheese and ham omelette, baked beans and brown toast, I did think, crikey, that is a lot of food. Kind of plays into the Alan Shearer chicken and beans thing.
Yeah, that pretty much gone in the bin. I think, like I said about, you know, taking experience from each thing, that's exactly the same. I think if you go into a game feeling bloated or not feeling right because of certain things, you know, you look to tweak things to change it. So that's the route I'm at the minute. You know, you've got to see what works for you, basically.
Okay, secondly, Dimitar Mitov. You were with him at Charlton. Now, you roomed with Dimitar Mitov, right? I believe he dreams in a bit of a weird way.
Yeah, I don't know where you've got that from, but I don't remember loads. I just remember, I think I woke up in the night a couple of times and he's like dreaming and literally speaking out loud, but in just pure Bulgarian. That was like madness, absolute madness coming out. And I just remember sitting there thinking, I don't know whether to wake him up or let it all, it's going to stop. But just remember thinking, what is going on there? It's a weird thing to witness. Especially, he gave me no warning either, so that didn't help. Just woke up and it was totally out of the blue.
Did you speak to him about it when you woke up in the morning?
Yeah, I spoke to him in the morning, yeah. I'm glad to see he's doing well now, actually. He's at Cambridge, he's playing every week, so yeah, I'm delighted for him.
Okay, and lastly, this is the first season, I believe, especially in professional football, where you've actually got the number one shirt. Was that a conscious decision that you wanted that? Because I know you'd had 29 previously, you'd worn a number of different numbers at different clubs, but this season you actually are the physical number one.
Yeah, the lads are having me off about that, saying I was asking for it while Heats was on the M6 and everything. So it was something I was aware of, you know. I'd never had the opportunity to wear that. And, you know, as a goalkeeper growing up from such a young age, number one is the shirt you want. I thought, now's the time. It's got to be now or it might not be never, you know. So obviously Heats leaving was a massive decision for himself and the club and everyone, and to lose your captain and everything was a big thing. But yeah, it was an honour to take over from him, and just something for myself that I just looked to, just kind of a bucket list thing I kind of see as to, you know, something to say, like, no, I've done it. Yeah, look, it's like you say, I've never had the chance before. I've been all sorts of 20s and 30s up till this season, yeah.
Last question, Popey. Look, really appreciate your time. Fantastic interview this has been. I always ask every goalkeeper this at the end of the podcast, just to get their thoughts, to get some really interesting answers. So, Nick Pope, what has goalkeeping given you?
Oh, God, this is when Heats got deep, isn't it?
Oh, really deep. It got ridiculous.
And rather, and I won't lie to you, mate, rather complicated. I didn't know what was going on.
I loved it.
The podcast doubling length at this moment. I'm not liking my eyes up. What has goalkeeping given me? That is an interesting question. I've not been asked that before. I have no idea.
I think we're going to leave the dramatic pause in, by the way.
I'm going to have to listen to his podcast. I'm going to laugh at whatever he says. I know I am. I can just picture it now.
It did get deep. We've had some interesting ones, actually, because it ranges from just enjoyment. Some. Do you know that the most common answer we get is everything? That's the most common answer we get.
Or a career. It's given me a career. It's given me enjoyment. I suppose in your case, Nick, as well, it's still got plenty to give you.
Hopefully, yeah. I'd say definitely both of them. You know, my brother was someone who kind of got me into it a bit, but being 3 years older, 3 or 4 years older than me, and he was a goalkeeper, and I'd go and watch him on a Saturday, and still do now when I get the opportunity, you know. So I've got to thank him for that. And like I say, it's given me a whole career as well, so I wouldn't be good enough to play outfield. So I'd have to be at university still working on something to be getting by. Lord knows what I'd be doing. My old man says I'd be in a real pickle if I wouldn't have made it as a goalkeeper. So I think he's right on that, for once on that. So yeah, it has given me a lot of things. And like I say as well, I really do enjoy it. As much as I do enjoy playing outfield when I get given the opportunity in training or whatever, or going up for a corner, there's nothing that, you know, beats getting a clean sheet and a win on a Saturday. I think that's a massive thing of the enjoyment. And, you know, whether it's a save late in the game or you take a cross to relieve the pressure, and moments like that, I think, is what you look for as a goalkeeper. And the things you kind of, that's what you get your enjoyment out of the most.
Nick Pope, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Carrizo on for the danger. Sims inside the box now. Josh Sims. Will he need to stop him? That's only at the post. Outside of the post. Nick Pope saved that. Nick Pope has saved that. This looks a top drawer save.
Oh, it is.
Oh, he's pushed onto the post.
Here we are. We'll see the better angle now. He's cut
he's
along.
He's pushed onto the post, hasn't he?
Yeah. Oh,
what a save. That is top drawer. What a save that is. Wow.
Well, I tell you what, mate. Just you, me and Popey playing two touch and connect four. There's a reason I got into this business, and that is it.
What a dream day that would be.
What a dream day. For me and you.
Yeah.
I can imagine on the morning. Popey, up for connect four?
Popey? Nothing.
Double
blue tick.
Yeah. He's read it. Absolutely nothing. But the mindset thing was really fascinating, because we talk about it a lot on this podcast, and sometimes I'm worried about repetition, but with him, completely.
Completely different. And what I love, I actually saw something the other day, and it was it's irrelevant who the guy was, but essentially he was saying the secret to life is there is no secret. And he was just going along the lines of that ultimately it's about getting your head down, focusing, work as hard as you can. That's it. There's no secret formula, there's no magic formula. And what I'd say, and when I actually made the point to him, that I got the impression, the way that he was talking, that he's obviously very laid back. And yeah, you know, ordinarily you hear, let's say you fall out of the game, like he did, and he was playing in non-league. Normally you'd get your motivational coaches that saying, you need to believe you're going to play in the Premier League, picture it, see it, and all the kind of stuff that I would preach. Yet he said, no, I didn't believe I would. So, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden he's back in. He's
that
at Charlton.
That really surprised me when he said
well,
that.
It shocked me.
Yeah.
He was at Charlton, and it was like, and then my goal was just to play a league game. And like, at that point, isn't your goal to play for Charlton? Isn't your goal to play in it? But it's like, you know, no, just to play a league game. So it just, but what, I suppose my point being, what it fascinated me is there isn't often a right or a wrong. I think what he has, and he certainly still has, he has the core attributes. He obviously works harder than anyone. The fact he's watching his games back without necessarily having the whole see to believe, bleed to see, which I know you enjoyed so much from the Tom Heaton podcast, without necessarily putting out these massive visions, massive goals, what he said he does is just realistic goals. So in a way, he's doing all the right things without necessarily wording it in that way. He's working harder than anyone. He's enjoying his craft. He loves goalkeeping. You can hear that from the way in which he talks. He takes it game by game. It's a cliche, but that's what he's doing. And good things are just happening. He's not having to put that extra pressure on himself by believing that he has to get there at a certain time or date and putting deadlines on it and everything else. Now, by the way, that's not to say that's wrong, because again, everybody has their own approach. The feeling I get, given the type of character that he is, that ultimately he's just keeping it really simple. He's focusing on each moment. He's focusing on each day. He even said there, you know, you talked about something that happened a year and a half ago, and I think he was genuine when he said it was a long time ago, because again, the way in which his mindset is, and it's working perfectly for him. And I think a lot of goalkeepers listening in, they'll love that, because they'll be very much of the same mindset, and it might get a little bit too much when you get quite deep. And obviously, look, Tom Heaton, what he does works for him, which is quite deep. But I think for a lot of goalkeepers, the way in which he's going about things is perfect. Just focus on what you're doing, work harder than anyone, and what will be. And in his case, that's playing at the top of the Premier League.
Yeah, I think the thing that he didn't remember as well being a year and a half ago, that is another example of a fan slash journo really paying more attention to someone's career than themselves. Yep. I was like, oh, you know, when Jack Butland spoke to you.
No idea.
No, can't remember.
No idea. No. He gave you an answer because he's nice. He's a nice person. He gave you an answer, but no idea, because that's it. You just live in the moment. You just try hard. And do you know what? Some days will be good days. Some days will be bad days. For him, because he's got a lot of the basics absolutely spot on, he's having a lot more good days than bad days.
Mm. The education thing as well was interesting, because obviously there are a lot of goalkeepers and footballers who take time out to get an education, like you did in football, especially with business. Paul Rachupka we spoke to and said, you know, I had a few free hours coming back from training. I wasn't doing anything, so I decided to dedicate my time to education. Nick Pope started that way and then slowly realised, you know what, maybe I haven't got the time. I want to focus purely on football.
Well, the interesting thing is that there's a risk to not getting an education. Similarly, there's a risk to getting an education. Now, what I mean by that, the risk of not getting an education is that at some point you get released, you have no contract, and you've got nothing to fall back on. However, the risk to getting an education is that you're not fully focused on football. Exactly what Nick Pope said. And there is a truth in that as well. Now, look, again, no right or wrong answer, because it's different for every individual and people operate differently. What I always say, and this is my advice I give to pretty much every young goalkeeper, it's not necessarily the advice that parents will want to hear, but if you genuinely believe you've got a chance at making it to the top, give it everything. Because do you know what? Even if it means you come out and you have to spend a year or two then going into something else, you can fully focus on that as and when you have to. But you only get one chance to be a professional footballer. And I think Nick Pope realised that, and obviously realised when he was at Charlton, look, if I really want to do this, I'll give this everything and I can worry about that later. Even if you're 28, 30, 35 when you're getting your education, 50 getting your education, doesn't matter. You can still do another profession that you can last and be 65, 70 doing. You can't do that as a professional footballer.
It really is a fascinating story with him, and to think that he was at Bury Town, so low down in the non-league tier, and then at Team Bury, their feeder side. I know he was only a young kid at the time, but he came up through all of that. Eventually, he ended up at Burnley, and it's quite interesting as well to hear about the fact that he got an injury, and I know you have to spin it into a positive, but he really did, and he said, it gave me an opportunity to reflect. It had been crazy that year at Burnley. You know, he came in for Tom Heaton, pretty much played every game towards the end of the season. He got the England call-up. He got the Player of the Year. In terms of stats, I think he was second behind David De Gea. His stats were better than any England goalkeeper in that Premier League and Championship for Jack Butland. So he'd done incredibly well on a domestic level. But to then get that injury, he was able to go, do you know what? Ooh, I can breathe. I can take stock of it. And now, arguably, he could come back an even better goalkeeper.
Yeah, you're right. His stats, he was second to David De Gea. And that whole season, he was absolutely phenomenal. And how often have we seen it where a goalkeeper has that season and then maybe they fade away a little bit? But the fact is, he got the injury. He's now come back. He looks stronger than ever. And look, you never know. And he said that, he touched on it, a year and a half is a long time in football. He's not resting on his laurels. He is just taking it week by week, game by game. And if he keeps his place at Burnley, then of course he will likely be in the England squad for the coming matches and for the Euros next year. No, I love his approach. It's very refreshing. It's very different. It was certainly a very different podcast, I think, to anything that we've done before. And I feel like I've learned something.
Oh, There we go. I quite like, actually, the fact that obviously you like delving into the psychological aspect. He just wasn't really into that.
Yeah.
The psychology. I mean, I suppose the way he interprets it can be construed as psychology, but a completely different side of it.
That's the point. I think that's the point, in that there is no right or wrong. I might have told this story before, but Mark Poom at Watford, he had a key to the gym. The reason he had a key was that he got there earlier to the training ground than anybody else. So he let himself in. Similarly, he left later, so locked up when he left. Now, some people work like that, and for him he was a very intense character, whereas you had Ben Foster, who didn't want to do a warm-up. Ben Foster, who turns up an hour and a half late for a game because he overslept, you know. But similarly, Ben was just so much more laid back, and that suits him. I would say Nick sort of is more on that side of things, where he seems laid back, but interestingly, and what's critical in this, is that he's doing the right things. He's still putting the work in. It's not like he's laid back and doesn't care. He actually, you can tell he loves goalkeeping, but the way in which his mindset is fantastic for what he does is that he does all the things that's going to make him the top goalkeeper. But when he enters the game, you can tell that he enters with that calm confidence. He doesn't feel that he needs to read book after book, because actually he's ticking a lot of the boxes that the books would teach him anyway.
Richard, thank you.
I enjoyed that.
Good. This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast for another week in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. Myself and Richard, we'll see you next time.